The Guardian.
Football Weekly today, rounding up the news from a Premier League bereaved and bewildered by the death of Gary Speed. Elsewhere, surprise defeats for Barcelona and Bayern in our continental roundup. A preview of the midweek League Cup and Europa League action. Championship news, posts, tweets, and more in this Football Weekly. Well, hello everybody. Barry Glendinning with us today. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Hi, Jacob. And Paul McInnes.
Hello.
Hi, Paul. Obviously, not an ordinary show this. Given the way the sport has been shocked by the extraordinary news of Gary Speed's death. One that I think left absolutely nobody unaffected.
I think everyone was gobsmacked when they heard about it. He's a top bloke by all accounts. And the fact that he'd been on Football Focus the day before made it even more strange and bizarre. And the tributes have been pouring in from him, and you know, I suppose all we can do is echo those sentiments, because he seems, I've never met the guy, but nobody seems to have a bad word to say about him.
I think what you've kind of come to realise the last 24 hours as well was quite what he did achieve, because one of the points that's made about him is he was a low-key superstar. But, you know, the records for outfield appearances for Wales, first person past 500 in the Premiership, captain at every club he was at, played from 22 years at the top flight, scored an overhead kick at 36. They're just the amazing things that he achieved throughout his career. It's been good to have an opportunity to focus on it amidst all the kind of horrible nature of this story.
Horrible on every level, on a sporting level, because it seemed like he was poised for yet another success, but way beyond that, the tragedy for his family. But anyway, there you go. It was a Premier League weekend, obviously affected by that. Big game on Sunday afternoon, coming in the wake of that news, the clash at Anfield, where Man City were held to a draw. That's what, a draw and a defeat in the last two games. Signs of vulnerability, Jacob Steinberg?
I'm not sure about that. It's the second time they've dropped points in the league all season, and they've only drawn twice in the league. But they were quite tired, I think, after the Napoli game. That's what it seemed like to me. And they left Balotelli and Dzeko on the bench, and they tried to play Aguero up front, maybe tighten it up in midfield, because Liverpool, after beating Chelsea, were in a good run of form. And it didn't really work, I think, for them. I think they lacked a focal point in attack, and Liverpool did really well to stifle Silva with their own five-man midfield. He couldn't really get into the game. I wondered whether Nasri and Silva together kind of got in each other's way and a little bit.
Lucas Leiva. Maybe that was Man City's problem. Is there still space for us to jump on board the Lucas bandwagon?
Yeah, Greg's not here today.
So all right, okay. 92% pass completion, 100% tackle success rate by the extraordinary Brazilian, who we've always been a fan of, I think it's fair to say, Barry.
I think we have.
We have, yeah.
But not all Liverpool fans were. But I was discussing this with Greg earlier today, and he was saying, he maintains that Lucas deserved all the flack he got when he began his Liverpool career, even if some of it seems to have been because he wasn't as good as Xavi Alonso. And, you know, not many players are, and they're completely different kinds of players. But he was excellent. I think in his chalkboard column today, Michael Cox pointed out he had 11 successful tackles, made a lot of crucial interceptions. And in terms of breaking up the play, you know, what more can you ask for?
He led by example, really. It's very, really interesting to see. I think there's lots of things that is in Lucas's game that Henderson and Adam are trying to adopt. I think the nimbleness across the pitch is one thing. A lot of those tackles that Lucas made, he was nicking them off the balls, off people's toes, getting into situations very quickly. And I think what impressed me most about Liverpool yesterday was the agility of their midfield, the fluidity. They played very good short triangle passes in the pass and move in the Liverpool tradition, but they were covering loads of ground as well and really getting around the pitch, and Lucas was most prominent in that.
The Balotelli conundrum. Where do you stand, Paul?
Well, I kind of think he's got it's a marketing campaign. I think he looks at it and, you know, there's Mancini said he's top five in the world. Well, I think he's not. And if he's going to make billions and billions of dollars, he needs to have a brand that's sufficiently distinct. And so I think his
Disturbed.
Brand is... Yes. Yeah. I think his brand is Bad Boy. Right. I am, you know, I'm a supremely talented, but I am a bad boy. And that thing, that first, the yellow card yesterday, the first yellow card was ludicrous. I mean, it just was like somebody going up in the playground and slapping somebody around or in a club or something. It was willful. And I can't think he's that you know, he gets this all, he does this all the time, and I think there's got to be an element of it that's deliberate.
What did he actually do to the dressing room door afterwards?
Kicked it, so I heard.
Or did he just slam it? Has that been a bit...
I think he apparently slammed it, but I don't know. Right, this right, happened right. quite a lot, though. I remember Ian Wright trashing a dressing room once.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's happened before, yeah. Although he was a bit unlucky, I thought, with the second yellow card.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I thought he was very unlucky.
I think he got
that
sent
too.
Off for being Balotelli, really, and the referee kind of reacted to the way the crowd were baying for him and the Liverpool players all ran over, and I think Mancini was quite possibly right when he said that the Liverpool got him sent off.
But he went in with an elbow. Was it Couch?
Skirtle.
Sorry.
It was just kind of wafting it around him, though. When I saw it was Balotelli, I thought, he's going to get sent off now. But if it had been Silva or Aguero, I don't think it would have happened.
But if it's somebody, you know, it's kind of feeds itself as well in the sense that Balotelli goes on, he starts acting recklessly.
Yeah.
He gives the referee the suspicion, the opportunity to think
so
about reckless
Kenny
play.
Deglish.
I mean, I think it was a harsh yellow, but not very harsh. And I also think the way when he's sitting on the floor with his arms out and his "why always me" pose, it's very much like, "Hey guys, you can't book me for that," as if he knew that he might run the risk of booking it by doing that action.
Paul, so you're down with the youth. Just want to check on something, kind of culturally speaking. The haircut, does that say anything? Is there a message there?
I think that says.
Is there literally a message there? Or
I think that
is
says,
it in Elvish or something.
Is it in Elvish? I know it's like I've been watching a lot of, because I'm down with the kids, I've been watching a lot of MasterChef The Professionals.
All right.
And it looks like a very good, delicate piece of chocolate work.
I thought, in the interests of balance, which we're all about here on Football Weekly, I thought Liverpool could have had a couple of players sent off yesterday. Pepe Reina could have gone for a deliberate handball outside the penalty area. And Balotelli's sort of one of his main competitors in the Premier League bad boy stakes, Luis Suarez, was up to his old tricks, pulling off the spectacular sort of studs into the shin challenge, which then transformed into a theatrical dive on Vincent Kompany. And so that's like a red card and a bookable offence in one movement. And he got nothing.
Quite a good duel, that, wasn't it, between Kompany and Suarez throughout. It's like Suarez, whenever the ball was on the ground, he obviously thought he had the advantage. In the air, he just got wiped out every time. It's funny.
But if I was a Man City fan, I think I'd see yesterday as a point gained rather than two lost.
A point gained thanks to Joe Hart?
He's very good save from Andy Carroll.
During the minute-by-minute, when I was in the office, when Carroll came on, there were quite a few Liverpool fans around, and I could hear them slagging off Carroll for about 5 minutes, and then he nearly scored a great header right at the end. But yeah, it was a really good save from
great header, but an even greater save, an even greater performance, though fantastic though Joe Hart was this weekend in goal, was possibly over at Old Trafford. Tim Krul, an astonishing show between the posts.
You talk about a point game for City, especially because United dropped two huge points, and if United had won that game, it'd be 3 points behind. But now it's still five, and you can't really see where City are going to drop anything at the moment.
So. Really? Interesting, Jacob. We're still only about a third of the way through the season.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's still early days. I mean, Manchester City, obviously a great side, but yesterday you saw them on a day when all their many in-form attacking players looked a little bit out of shape, and when that didn't happen, they didn't create that many chances.
Can you see where Man United are going to lose games, though, on the basis of that performance? Or were they extremely unlucky not to win because the penalty
wasn't
it
wasn't a penalty. And I don't know why the referee can't overrule the assistant. And you can see quite clearly the ball changes direction, which is an indication that it was a fair tackle from Rio Ferdinand. But, you know, United have scored 9 goals in the last 8 league games. And if you are winning every game 1-0, you leave yourself open to a bit of misfortune like that.
I mean, I think United have been quite lucky in recent weeks. I thought they were very poor against Sunderland and they still won. But they probably played quite well against Newcastle and only got a point. They were poor against Norwich poor against Swansea and won. So I'm not sure how much longer they can ride their luck like that. Plus, they have their problems in midfield now with Noah Anderson.
But this is classic United, though, isn't it? This is what they do at this time of the season. They don't play very well. They win 1-0. They maybe games that they're about to lose, they get a point.
Yeah, they might not be too worried about this because they've been there before, whereas City haven't, and maybe don't know how they're going to react come the end of the season.
I also wanted to ask about Wayne Rooney's hair transplant. I'm watching this with great interest to see how it's going to resist the rigours of a Premier League season. And I'm not entirely confident after after the game.
Is it Thinning again?
I don't know. It's difficult, you know, when there's sweat and there's stuff happening.
Do you have it freeze-framed on HD just to count the follicles or something?
Yeah, I have people to do that, but that's the technique, yeah. Spurs, let's get on to them then before we round off part one, because they're very much at the top table right now. Third, once again, with that game in hand. No Modric this weekend, no Raphael van der Vaart, and they went to Hawthorns and came back with a big win.
Yeah, they obviously had a dodgy first half. West Brom had a good first half. West Brom missed a couple of good chances. Spurs didn't miss their couple of good chances, but I think they set up the team to be more direct away from home, and the Defoe plays well in that sort of team.
Yeah.
And that his goal was, you know, classic Defoe, yeah, but at the high end of classic Defoe, in that he ran a long way with the ball and he clipped the shot rather than powering, because he didn't have an awful lot of room, so he took that chance very well.
5 goals and 5 starts, statistics suggest. What happens now with him? Does he stick around at White Hart Lane, or he's making noises about going somewhere on loan in order to get a look in for the England side?
I can't believe they'll let him go on loan. You never know with Harry, if the money comes, if the offer comes in, you never know what he'd do. But
he should stay though, because they won't win the league, but you know, they definitely could challenge for it.
Is that the Premier League or the Europa League, which they're also in this week? And, of course, there's plenty of opportunities there for not necessarily first-choice strikers. I note that this week they're going to be at home to PAOK Salonika. Full-strength side going out for that one, is it, Jacob?
You'd think not, no.
No, OK. No, tell us a bit about this game.
Well, Spurs in a little bit of trouble, I think, because they're third in the group. And PAOK are top. So if they win, they go through. And what's your question?
My question is, they're in a group stage at the moment. Are they in the Europa League?
Yeah.
Yeah, how many games have they got left in the group stage?
Two left.
So there's this one and then another one.
Yeah, okay. But they play Shamrock Rovers away, I think, in the last one.
Yeah.
So they should still get through.
All right, then.
Is PAOK the official pronunciation?
Well, I'm only saying it because Jimbo said
How should I be saying it?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's like Angel or Angel, whether there's like various different ways of pronouncing it.
With P-A-O-K.
But do the Greeks go PAOK?
I don't think they do.
No.
If you are Greek, do let us know in time for Thursday's show.
Because Greek people have nothing else to be worrying about.
That's all you can do. It's free, though, to speculate on the pronunciation.
I suppose, yes.
Teams
it's
names.
The only entertainment they have left.
Yeah.
Tottenham are 2 points behind Manchester United. Everyone thinks Manchester United can win the league. Why? But nobody seems to think Spurs can. Are they genuine title contenders?
Is it a question of depth of squad?
Well, they're playing very well.
Yeah, but is it a question of depth of squad?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they were to lose Modric for a while, Adebayor for a while, Barker for a while...
They could conceivably lose their manager for a while as well.
All right. Very interesting. All right, well, that's it for part one. In part two, Chelsea. League Cup quarterfinals, eh? Arsenal, all that sort of thing. Stand by for that after this. Part two then, Chelsea with a win. Crisis over? Or is this just the beginning of an absolutely season-defining period of games? Because they have Liverpool coming up in the League Cup quarterfinals this midweek. Then they have Newcastle away on Saturday. Then Valencia in the Champions League. And then they host Man City in the Premier League again. Woof.
Woof indeed.
Woof.
I don't think beating Wolves is the end of a crisis or anything. If they'd lost against Wolves or failed to beat them, then, you know, the pressure would have ratcheted up on Andres Villas-Boas.
Has Andrew Villas-Boas stumbled upon the winning formula in the midfield just in time for this crucial run of games? With Oriol Romeu in there. Everybody's raving about Oriol Romeu. Yeah,
wherefore out was he? Yeah. Until Saturday when he was put in the first 11.
And there he, yeah, and...
And made a difference.
Having such sweet sorrow for Wolves.
I think there's a real... I think it's a real, real problem for Villas-Boas, and I feel very sorry for him, because I think, you know, you drop Frank Lampard, you've then got that... But the combination is better in that midfield three. Again, more agility, cover more ground, and the technical ability is still there. But would you go with that combination against Valencia on a one-off 90 minutes where you need to win?
No, Lampard will play.
Lampard will play.
Yeah.
And then so you've got this thing where there's still a kind of contrasting messages. There's still some very important players who can't quite be weeded out of the team yet. And I think this could recur, this problem.
How much longer will Torres enter into that category? The highlights on Saturday seem to suggest that his only touch had been a kind of dithering crisis of confidence style, lack of pass to either of the two options open to him before he was eventually tackled.
He didn't get much of a run out in defence.
Hmm.
It would be harsh, just going back to Lampard, if he was dropped just pop with his fiancée having been so unceremoniously dropped by Daybreak the previous week. It would be grim times at the breakfast table. But Torres, it's hard to see if he has any future at all at Chelsea. And I don't know, I find his just the way his stock and form has plummeted absolutely bewildering.
Just going back a bit, are you saying there are opportunities at Daybreak?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Now, Chelsea, meantime, so they have the quarterfinal with Liverpool. That's a big game.
That is a big game.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on how seriously they take it.
Well, I'm wondering. They'll take it seriously, won't they, in their current
Chelsea,
position?
Chelsea, yeah. But Liverpool might not, given that they Kenny Dalglish was complaining about it a couple of weeks ago.
But he doesn't have Europe to worry about.
No, but he's got
he's a team of kids, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that's what he said, and he warned the fans not to spend any money on it, which was...
decent of him.
He said, "Well, he said the fans should be aware that we might well play a reserve team.
We might well chuck this game."
Yeah,
But it's a team of kids plus Andy Carroll. I mean, he's a kid,
isn't
he?
Might well
really?
Be a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. All right, but anyway, so Chelsea not out of the woods, etc., etc.
By no means.
No. Very good. And a tough run of games. Other League Cup quarterfinals, for those who do care about this competition, include Cardiff Blackburn. You saw Stoke Blackburn this week, Barry.
I did. I watched
out of your own.
In my own leisure time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Right. What did you learn from that then? Not to watch Stoke Blackburn?
It was dire. It wasn't helped at all by the windy conditions, which obviously, given the amount of time the ball spent in the sky.
I presume nobody tried flying a low-flying aircraft at this one with trailing Keane out there.
But I've sort of been of the opinion that Blackburn fans have been a bit too unfair on Steve Keane, but having seen how clueless they were against Stoke, and his record speaks for itself, speaks very loudly for itself. I just don't know how he's in the job. And this at the end of a week in which he was given a pay rise for no apparent reason. You know, his results are shocking. The fans hate him, and like genuinely seem to hate him. And it's hard to see how he's still in the job.
It's quite interesting, isn't it, with Blackburn, because you watch them and, I mean, I think they've had their best performance of the season against us at Carrow Road, but you watch them and they do give 110% for their manager. There's no doubt they're committed and want to play for him. But at the same time, like you say, you look at them set up and they're set up abysmally and they're always making stupid errors like Nzonzi for the second goal and things. And you think, well, that's obviously the fault of the manager because the manager isn't conveying instructions that are getting them set up right. So on the one hand, he's getting that thing that a lot of managers struggle to get. On the other hand...
And then at bottom of the table as well, I should throw that in, because Wigan went and won at Sunderland. Now, we haven't had a manager lose his job, thankfully, so far this season, but three look particularly in danger, and they would be, presumably now. I'm not sure in which order you'd put this. Steve Bruce, Steve Keane, of course, of Blackburn, and Owen Coyle, who lost at home to... his Bolton team lost at home to Everton this weekend.
Well, it's hard to see how Steve Bruce can remain in the Sunderland job after losing against a Wigan team that are hopeless. And he said yesterday or on Saturday that he's never walked away from anything in football in his life, which, of course, any fans of Crystal Palace, Sheffield United, Wigan will all know is untrue, because he's walked away from all those management jobs to take better ones. And Sunderland are awful. And he's bought loads of players who don't seem to be much good. And there's no philosophy at the stadium alike. He doesn't seem to have any sort of plan, never mind a master plan of how he'd like his team to play. And he's demanding time and patience, but that's all he's ever had at Sunderland. He's had loads of time, loads of patience, and done nothing with it.
It's his third season, isn't it, now?
Yes.
And yeah, it's been pretty mediocre, hasn't it?
Yeah. And he said at the start, or he said it last week or the week before, that the team aren't playing well because fans were expecting too much of them. But I don't know what these high expectations were. I was expecting them to be able to beat Wigan at home. You know, I wasn't looking for the moon on a stick or anything.
So you're saying if you turn up against Man United and expect to lose 5-0, you'll beat them? Is that his logic?
I don't know. That game against Manchester United was the most disappointing one for me, because I thought United played so poorly and Sunderland still managed to lose.
They seem to have a huge squad, but it just seems to be a different team every week, and there's no real clue about what he should be doing.
Huge squad with no strikers as well. Mm. Well, I don't know. Well, Bentner, but
your point,
that's, yeah, that aside. what I'd like to know is he thought to have had any say in the departure of Asamoah Gyan?
Well, I think that was Asamoah Gyan who said, I'm off going. Then. But I think the number of strikers who have wished to leave under his tenure is one of the kind of smoking guns, if you like.
Spent a lot of money on
Darren
Bent
as well. Wanted to go. Kenwyn Jones, the big fella. Stoke, he wanted to leave, and then Asamoah Gyan demanded to leave as well. Mm. And they're all strikers that, you know, cost money.
They did indeed. Stoke facing a Europa League game with Dynamo Kiev, Jacob.
Yep, who've only scored 3 goals in the group, Dynamo Kiev.
But surely Shevchenko's still playing up front for them.
He is.
Oh.
Ha ha.
All right, well, that was an interesting game there.
Yeah, and, but if Stoke get a point here, I think, or a result, they go through.
Right.
And they're going to win the group as well.
Oh, it's a busy week, though, because they're doing that. We mentioned that Chelsea and Liverpool are having their quarter-final of the League Cup, Cardiff and Blackburn. Arsenal hosting Man City.
Sorry, just that.
Yeah.
Cardiff-Blackburn one, interesting. I checked this morning and Cardiff are the favourites.
Are they?
You'd probably,
well, yeah. It's a,
I kind of suspected they might be, but I checked and they are favourites with the bookies.
I've been to third in the Championship now. I'm looking pretty consistent.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the Championship in a second. We'll just keep these other plates spinning of Europa League and League Cup. Arsenal-Man City, both sides need a trophy, probably, no? They'll both go for that one, won't they?
Sami Nasri back at the Emirates, possibly.
Oh, yeah. Sizzle. And meanwhile, over in the Europa League spinning plate, Fulham are only taking on FC 20, which means Martin Jol up against his fellow countrymen.
And Brian Ruiz back at his old club.
That's true.
Mm.
Wow, Europa League, eh? Why have we always ignored this competition?
It's so exciting, isn't it? You just look at the fixtures and you think, I want to stay on Thursday.
No wonder they didn't try putting any Champions League games on this week. No one would be watching. Good. I mentioned Fulham. That was quite a result, wasn't it? At the Emirates at the weekend?
Yeah,
no?
Like they play very well, Fulham. And Brian Ruiz looked like he had a good, strong, decisive game for Fulham too.
Cracking own goal as well from Vermaelen.
Yeah, the free-scoring Belgian, eh?
Yeah, both ends. But Wenger said that he did it because he's left-footed and he didn't want to use his right foot, so he didn't want to clear it with his... With his right. So instead he just shanked it into his own goal.
Right.
Yeah.
As an international,
what could have been a worse alternative if he had hit it with his right foot?
Yeah.
Interestingly, or not, depending on your point of view, Vermaelen is the 31st player to score an own goal and a proper goal in the Premier League since it started in 1992.
Quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
31 players.
31 players.
Can you name any others?
Has Jamie Carragher done it?
Hardly. I think it's
Frank Sinclair must have done it some point.
Richard Dunn must have done it several times. I didn't have a list, I just had a number.
Oh, right.
That number was 31.
Okay. Here's a stat. Arsenal recoup more points from losing positions this season than any other team. Yeah, have that. Should also mention, well done to David Moyes, whose Everton team, who I could have sworn were only a point off the drop last time I looked, are now up in ninth.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? Meanwhile, you went all the way to Carrow Road to see Norwich QPR this weekend, and we haven't even asked you about it, Paul McInnes.
It's probably a good thing you haven't had to, because it was essentially not a V good game.
No.
Folk hero Grant Holt did his bit, and that's enough for Norwich fans. But QPR, I think Colin, no, he's not Colin, he is Neil Warnock. And sorry, I'm going to get used to calling him by a sobriquet. But he went apoplectic after the game, claiming they'd been robbed and it was a massive injustice and all this sort of thing. But I don't think QPR were up to much at all. And it was only the fact that we really had 45 nervous minutes that they came into the game at all. So, you know, apparently, according to the pundits, we're all looking...
But something must have been making you nervous, I'm just thinking.
What I was saying, there was a lot of my peers in the music journalism game are QPR fans for some reason. Half of the staff of Q magazine. Must be the alliteration.
Is that where the title comes from?
It must be. Q magazine, Park Rangers.
What does Q... Is it question? What is Q? Probably everybody knows this. I don't know this.
No, I don't.
Okay, what's Q magazine called? Q for?
Q, it might be like queuing up the next track for you young hep cats.
James Bond tribute.
No, seriously, it's one of those things nobody knows, eh?
I certainly don't know it.
If you don't know it, Paul, I doubt anyone does.
But let me just make this quick point about QPR.
Right.
I think there was talking after the game, there was a feeling really that we were the only ones who thought that that game really, really mattered. That in that kind of mini league thing, and after Ros going four games without a win, it was very important for us to get a win. And QPR, I don't think, were quite in the same mental space, so that might be why we came out on top.
All right, excellent. That brings us to the end of part two. Very, very shortly, that Sid Lowe business, which we were promising, and Germany, and also the Championship as well. Part three, we're all dying to talk about Inigo Martinez. Is that right?
Yes, the Real Sociedad defender who scored from inside his own half yesterday, the last-minute winner in a relegation dogfight, six-pointer type game. It's the second goal he scored from inside his own half this season, and he's also scored one of the most spectacular own goals of all time for Spain under-21s past David De Gea, which I think could only be described as a 30-yard backheel volley.
Woof.
Over De Gea into his own net. So, yeah, that's like three of those goals, one a month since September. So it'll be interesting to see what he has planned for December.
Crikey. Well, we'll talk to Sid in a bit. A couple of posts and tweets, first of all. ACDC Milan says, your story about no chips at the Etihad, have you checked the supporters' shoulders? we mentioned Barry Glendinning in the film. Barry, you were much missed in your absence. Lots of people were posting in anyway with suggested cast for said film. I did enjoy Theo Williams'
edition. What, my biopic?
Yeah, Meryl Streep as Barry. If she can do Thatcher, she can do Glendinning. Surefire Oscar material. Sian Fort says, I nominate Kermit to play James. I'm not sure where he gets that from. Lee
Kermit
Marvin
the Frog?
Yeah. I believe so.
It could be Kermit the Rapper from Black Grape.
Oh, I wasn't familiar with Kermit the Rapper from Black Grape.
Right. You'd probably rather have Kermit the Frog, to be honest.
Which one was Kermit the Rapper?
He's in Black Grape. He's a rapper.
What, now?
Called Kermit.
Or back in the day when Black Grape were...
Back in the day when Black Grape... He used to be a member of the Ruthless Rap Assassins.
Oh, I love the Ruthless Rap Assassins.
And then he moved on.
It's just Mellow.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. That's quite old school, isn't it?
That is rather too old school.
All right. Good. Lee Marvin is my hero, says, with Cassano, Ibra, Binho, Kevin Prince-Boateng, etc., Milan decided they needed a balmy calming influence in the dressing room, so they decided to go in for Tevez. There you go. He's bewildered at that, but I don't know. I think it makes sense, Tevez to Milan. They've already taken Robinho, fellow Man City reject, and rehabilitated him to some extent. They've done a similar job with other players as well. Cassano, remember how he came to the club, having told his president to F off in front of a whole bunch of fans, and he's managed to kind of toe the line. So there's something about that whole kind of corporate well-being.
It's isn't it? It's just calming influence.
Well, I read somewhere today that Milan will only take him subject to rigorous tests of his mental well-being.
Oh, really? So and rigorous tests of Man City paying half his wages?
Well, I'd imagine that, yeah. Too.
But they're not the only club in for Tevez, so yeah, we shall see. Other names that have been mentioned in the frame, Inter and... Juventus as well. A lot of talk over the weekend about how many millions of fiat money they want to throw his way.
Although, yeah. While writing the rumour mill this morning, I did stumble across quotes from somebody high up in the Juventus hierarchy.
All right.
Telling La Repubblica that they emphatically do not want to sign Carlos Tevez.
Sounds like it's on to me. Yep. Juve, of course, have got a big week ahead of them. You were excited, Jacob, I know, to see them and Milan duking it out on top of the Serie A pile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like back in the day, etc. Do you know that Juventus haven't lost a match since May?
No, but now I do.
No, yeah, they are like a... They're like a battleship, said the Gazette, steaming through the season. Gigi Buffon saying, though, what's all this talk of the title? Because they're top with a game in hand. What's all this talk of the title? We'll only mislead our fans. It was like this last year when we were second at this point, so it wasn't quite like this, and we managed to mess it all up. And so it's way too early to say, he says. Now, they do have a very important game coming up on Tuesday. If you enjoyed watching Napoli last Tuesday at home to Man City, you might want to tune in this Tuesday when they'll be at home to Juventus. And that's a bit of an acid test, if you like, for Battleship, Juve and all that. Oh, James Horncastle tweeting a quote from Marcello Lippi on Antonio Conte, who's, you know, the freshly rethatched hard man midfielder who's driving them forwards with his, must win at all costs. No, actually, it's not. The rethatched midfielder who's currently... sailing the good ship Juve. He and Marcello Lippi says, usually central midfielders are the best coaches. Is that fair, do you think? Central midfielders, best
Roy
coaches?
Keane.
Yeah.
Brian Robson.
Ooh. have that much Olympi. All right. Paul Ince.
maybe it's just Manchester United.
All right. If you're an Italian speaker, you'll have loved the Gazzetta's headline after Juve won on Saturday, away to the other team that was on top with them, Lazio. Juve Pepe e Sale, because Pepe scored the goal and Sale means moving up. If you're not an Italian speaker, you'd be rather bored by now. Let's move on. Hey, Paul McInnes, you've got to go and do music stuff. What are you going to go and do this afternoon?
I'm editing the magazine today.
Oh,
so
all right.
Today's the day you have all them. I do the guide.
The guide, yeah.
And today's the day where we have all the words.
And then
you put them onto the page.
Right.
Stick them there. Right. Send it out.
So what can you do between now and Saturday?
Sit on my arse and listen to Downloads, man, or watch web shorts.
All right. Have you got, because it's a while until the guide comes out, have you got a couple of little tidbits you can throw away, little previews?
Well, there is this band,
yeah.
This guy called King Cruel, right, who's 17 and ginger.
King Cruel?
Yeah, K-R-U-L-E.
Newcastle fans have got their own King Cruel right now.
They have,
yeah, they have,
another one.
But he's not 17 and ginger.
That's true, go on.
I was told, I was talking to some influential music people the other day, and they were saying he's the only kind of British prospect right now that's really getting people excited. We've got an interview with him.
All right.
And we've got a thing about our TV guy, Richard, reckons Community is the best sitcom in the world.
What's Community?
Exactly. Yeah. It's on Viva over here, but it's on kind of like networks in the States. And
all right.
We've got a big... It's got Chevy Chase in it.
No.
Chevy Chase. And
Chevy Chase is funny again?
Yes.
Thank God.
An irascible, kind of slightly forgetful man.
All right.
And we got a big piece on that. And then on
are
our
there
cover,
some films coming out that you've got to see early? Because, you know...
Well, yeah, but I've been watching arty films, which is a bit stupid.
Go on.
Well, there's this film called Shame, which is about Michael Fassbender shagging loads of people. And he has a sex addiction, apparently. But really, it's just kind of more and more kind of slightly gonzo acts in the middle of Manhattan, but it goes right to the heart of the human dilemma.
Right.
And Margin Call's very good.
It goes right to the heart of several things.
Yes, well.
Kind of
not as many as he would like in the end.
Really?
And yeah, he gets a bit sad. And Margin Call is about the collapse of the banks, and that is defo. That's really, really, that's your proper actually.
What's that called?
Kevin Spacey. Margin Call.
Comes out
in Jan.
All
and
right.
It'll be big at the Oscars.
Wow, that's so cool. All right then, Paul, you go off and do that.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Love you all.
Now, that's all very exciting, but not quite as exciting as what's up next, as Raphael Honigstein, in a week that's seen Rangers, Bayern Munich and Barcelona all losing for the first time in probably ever, and now joins us to break some news all over us. Break it, Raphael, break it.
The news is that Ronnie Rank's fantastic Robert Enkebook has just won the William Hill Prize for Sportsbook.
Oh, that's excellent news.
And I've just seen him accept it in a very, very moving speech. And he said, quote, "This is not really my book, this is Robert's book, and I'm very thankful for you having picked it." Very, very nice. Very pleased for him.
Excellent. All right. Now, quite a momentous weekend in the Bundesliga. Bayern losing for the second straight week, Raphael. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's difficult to say, really. I mean, against Dortmund, they were outplayed. Against Mainz, it seems to be more of an occasion where they come to a place where it's very hostile, the other team run a lot, and Bayern, for some reason, kind of a little bit lackadaisical, don't quite give it their all, and defend really badly, and just haven't got quite what it takes. They weren't at the races, I think Philipp Lahm said, in a different German metaphor. And that kind of sums it up. But you're right. I mean, it's the second defeat, the fourth overall. So by Bavarian standards, we're in crisis mode already.
It's interesting because it wasn't long ago. It looked like the title was already a done deal. Dortmund and Borussia Mönchengladbach ahead of them.
Yeah, and deservedly so. I mean, Dortmund have really got their groove back, certainly domestically. They look very, very strong. It was a derby against Schalke, only in name. Schalke never turned up, so it was very, very one-sided. Horsthell, the Schalke manager, said, "We played football to fall asleep to." And that kind of summed it up nicely. Dortmund didn't really have to try very hard. You didn't really see much from their star players, but it wasn't necessary. Yeah, as for Gladbach, I mean, I'm beginning to believe that they might be more than a surprise team. I mean, Uli Hoeneß, the Bayern president, called them title contenders on Saturday, and on the evidence of their 3-0 win away to Cologne on Friday night, he might just be right. I mean, they were outstanding again. Marco Reus, who is the main player for them, was for once not the star of the show. It shows you that there's actually a lot of depth in the squad, and they were flying, and Bayern, as you said, now down to third position.
Rafael, Borussia Mönchengladbach are usually down the other end of the table, no? So what's been the difference there?
Last year, in December, I think they had about 10 points at the same stage, and they were all but relegated, and they saved themselves in a relegation playoff when a new manager, Lucien Favre, came in. And you have to say, if there was ever any evidence needed that a good manager can change the fortunes of a team, this is it, because it's more or less the same team he had last year. Last year, perhaps they were underachieving a little bit, but my God, I mean, what he's doing with them is incredible. I mean, tactically, they're super smart, the way they play, they make it really difficult for you. On the break, they're extremely dangerous. Marco Reus is establishing himself as one of the great names to watch out for in German football. And it seems to be also that on the sort of man management level, he seems to be doing a fantastic job. If you remember, a few years ago with Hertha, they looked like title contenders when he was in charge there, and they just ran out of spin a little bit to finish fourth. But fourth this year would be enough to get into the Champions League. You know the reasons why, James. I won't have to go into that now. So they're looking very, very strong.
All right. You're referring to that coefficient business that saw Italy stripped of one of its Champions League places. Ars Technica posts in and says, can you ask Raphael Honigstein if the Bayern Munich fans could be persuaded to chant the ditty to sacked in the morning in the event Bayern Munich win Game 6 in the Champions League and the whole Schadenfreude-loving world cackles in unison?
I will certainly try my best convey that message.
Okay. Quick mention for the insane volley goal by Jan Schaudloff for Hannover.
How do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, right. Okay, take two. Mention perhaps for the insane volley goal by Jan Schlaudraff for Hannover. Any better?
A wonderful goal. Lothar Matthäus scored the goal of the year in the mid-90s, like that. Basically, a corner kick that was floating in right into the D or just outside, and the volley hit with a bit of the outside of the laces. Wonderful, wonderful goal. Thorsten Fink, the Hamburg manager, said he can try it 100 times without any opposition in training and he still won't hit the ball like that as well as he did. Unfortunately for Hamburg, he did. And it was a very good point for Hannover again.
Brilliant. All right, Raphael. Well, excellent. Thank you very much for that update. And we look forward to seeing you here in the pod soon. Raphael Honigstein. Sid Lowe in Spain should be on the way very shortly. Quick update on the championship, if I may. There, Jacob, you were a bit of a Hammers fan. We won't make any pretense about that. And you were quite excited to see them this weekend.
They beat Derby 3-1. Fairly convincing. They went 1-0 down after about half an hour. They were playing very poorly in the first half, and then they equalised straight away. In the second half, they dominated the game, and Kevin Nolan scored a really, really good volley from about 25 yards out. And Carlton Cole started playing really well. I think he's reacted to a bit of competition up front. In the last three games, he's made a difference for them, which you wouldn't have expected last season. Suddenly looks too good for that level.
Well, he has, from time to time, he has spells like that, doesn't he?
Yeah, but I think Allardyce is getting to him. And they look like a proper team. They're 2 points behind Southampton, who lost their away from home against Bristol City.
How 2-0. Surprising was that?
Not so surprising, because Bristol City, they started the season awfully, but they got Derek McInnes in, who I think he was at St Johnstone, and they've now won 4 of the last 5 games, and the draw they had in that sequence was at West Ham, which was a very good result for them. So they're suddenly looking up.
All right.
They're
still third from bottom, though, aren't they, in the championship?
Third from bottom, but they've left a bit of daylight between them and Coventry and Doncaster, 6 points, and they're level on points with Millwall, 1 point behind Nottingham Forest, who lost again to Cardiff, who are doing quite well. They're now 3 points off the automatic positions.
Mm-hmm.
Worth mentioning as well, this is a very big League One game on this evening, today being Monday, where Charlton entertain Huddersfield Town. It's top v second. And
top v third, actually.
It was top v third. Sorry, you knew that off the top of your head as well. You didn't even have to check. But Huddersfield have their 43 match unbeaten run, so could come to an end tonight.
So that unbeaten run involves the playoff final, which they lost on penalties.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, so there's a lot of people who say that it doesn't count. But
I can see their point, actually.
Yeah.
And of course, Birmingham, did we mention their Europa League clash?
No.
Oh, we haven't, because where are they now in the Championship?
They are just off the playoffs. They drew away to
Blackpool in eighth place on
the
weekend.
They're playing Sporting Braga,
who were only last year's Europa League finalists.
Yeah, and they lost that game 3-1 at home. But yeah, they could quite well qualify
for the knockout stages.
Birmingham, yeah.
Oh,
they've won both their away games in Europe in the group. So
remarkable. Now, equally remarkable this week is the fact, as I mentioned, that Barcelona lost away at Getafe, and they're now 6 points behind Real Madrid. That's the biggest margin between those two since 2003-04. My word. Sid Lowe, are you there?
Hello, James. I'm here.
Sid, Barcelona.
Yeah, the first time they failed to score away from home in 43 games, their first defeat this season in all competitions. So in that sense, you'd be looking at it and thinking, well, there isn't really a problem, is there? Just one defeat. The trouble is, of course, the Spanish league's not a normal league, and the opponent they're up against, Real Madrid, isn't a normal opponent. They're now 6 points down. And given that both of these two teams have racked up over 90 points in each of the last two seasons, 6 points is a really, really significant gap. Bear in mind as well that in 2 weeks' time, the first Clásico will be played between the two teams. And this time, the first one's going to be in Madrid, not in Barcelona. Barcelona are now in a position where they're obliged to win it rather than it being an opportunity for them.
All right, I see. You're going on record saying they're going to finish the season empty-handed, Barcelona, and it's all Pep's fault. Why is it?
I don't think I'm on record as saying they're going to finish the season empty-handed. It's all Pep's fault. There's a good chance of them finishing the season empty-handed, because bear in mind, apart from the Copa del Rey, really and truly we're talking about the league and the Champions League, Barcelona have got a very, very strong Real Madrid side in front of them. And of course, the Champions League, they've got a strong Real Madrid side and a series of other strong sides as well. Of course, Barcelona can win something. But there are things that I think they've done wrong this season, and things that they've been victims of as well. The pre-season was poor. Pep Guardiola himself complained about, he was talking about in the difference between the old days when you used to have a pre-season and these days where you have a tour. There's been quite a lot of tinkering with the squad, which of course in the long run may come good, but at the moment there's bits of it that don't really convince, in terms of the swapping to three at the back, for example, altering the shape of the forward line, trying to manipulate things to bring Messi into play all the time, which of course isn't necessarily a bad thing because Messi's such a good player, but at times Barcelona are going too narrow. They've not got the width they've had in the past, and there's a kind of flatness about them, a jadedness. There isn't the pace and the aggression about their game as there once was.
Yeah. All right. Madrid, meanwhile, look absolutely extraordinary. And yet another victory for them. 4-1 this time in the derby with Atleti.
Yeah, no surprise, is it, Real Madrid winning the derby against Atletico Madrid. 12 years now. At the end of the game, there was a banner, well, not really a banner, more like a mosaic held up by Real Madrid's ultras, in which it kind of did a mock advert and said, wanted, a worthy rival for a decent derby, because they're not sick of it. Of course, they love it, but they're making out that they're sick of beating Atletico Madrid too easily every time. This time, Atletico started really, really well. 15 minutes in, 1-0 up, playing well, putting quite a lot of pressure on Real Madrid. But then Courtois was sent off, penalty, red card, 1-1, down to 10 men, and that's the end of it.
Yeah. All right. So, well, it does look very delicate, then. But of course the Clásico could change things around. But Barry Glendening with a question here.
Well, no, I was just going to say, the last time Barca were 6 points behind Real Madrid at this stage of the season, they ended up losing the league by 18 points.
Wow.
And Sid, just what you were saying there about Barca not pressing as much as they used to, or being as energetic, do you think, are they just leggy and tired, or has complacency set in?
No, I don't think it's complacency. I think one of the Guardiola's big obsessions is changing things to make sure that complacency doesn't slip in. He's made a lot of tactical variations, which I don't think are entirely convincing. I think partly because the kind of the automatic movements are not there as much as they once were, because players are not entirely sure where teammates are, or at least not as sure as they once were. I think there's a physical question. Bear in mind, they've had 17 injuries this season, and I think I'm right in saying of those, 15 are muscular injuries, which I think tells you something about the slight failure in the pre-season training. I mean, all of this makes it sound very, very dramatic, which it isn't, of course, but the problem is that in Spain, with these two teams being so, so strong, even a very small slip is enough to cost you the title.
All right. Next up for Atletico anyway, another tough opponent, Celtic in Glasgow.
Yeah, although if you to take it from what happened in Madrid between those two teams, they wouldn't see it as very tough. After game, really struck by the fact that Neil Lennon was very pleased with his players for staying in the game for a while, and there was I thought a gulf in quality between the two that was enormous.
Mm, magnificent. All right, Sid, where are you?
I'm alongside a football pitch at the moment, which is why you can see lots of shouting and stuff.
Will you be playing?
I'm playing at the moment. I'm currently off as sub, so I can take this call.
No way. And are there three teams involved?
No, this time there's only two, but I did play in three-a-sided football again on Friday, and it was absolutely sensational.
All right, it is the future.
Did you know that Barney played at Wembley last week?
In three-sided football?
No, 11-a-sided football, and he played against Robert Pires.
No, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. But I'm going to ask him about it next time he's on. Sid, listen, you'd better save your breath for an eventual reappearance in the match. Many, many thanks. Look forward to catching up with you maybe Thursday.
Okay, cool. Cheers,
lovely. Cheers, Sid. And that brings us to the end of today's football
weekly.
Is it
really professional or unprofessional of Sid to go off during a football match to take a phone call?
Do you mean in terms of his career as a footballer? Or
I don't know.
All right. I don't know. I don't know, but he's Sid Lowe.
Is there another Spanish writer?
He's Sid Lowe, he can do what he wants.
He can do what he wants, and everybody wants a piece of Sid. That's for sure. Anyway, that's it for today's Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday. Many thanks to producer Ben, Barry Glenn Denning, Jacob Steinberg, Paul McKinnis, and you, the listener. Have a super week until we next catch up with you, and bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.